Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Dr. Rodney Pelzel. He has over 20 years of experience in the semiconductor industry with deep expertise in semiconductor materials, engineering, and epitaxial growth of compound semiconductors. Dr. Pelzel joined IQE as a production engineer in 2000 and is now head of R&D and is tasked with creating unique materials solutions that enable IQE's customers and provide them with a competitive edge. He is a chartered engineer and a chartered scientist and a fellow at the Institution of Chemical Engineers. Rodney's work has been widely published and he is the co-inventor of 30 plus patents. Welcome to the podcast, Rodney.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Very glad to be here.
So what originally got you started in semiconductors? Do you have an interesting story to share?
Yeah, I think I probably do. Like many in semiconductors, I didn't start thinking that's where I would probably end. So I have a very analytical mind, so fascinated with things, how things work. So technical path was always the choice, but actually originally thought I might want to be a medical doctor. So to hedge my bets, I did chemical engineering with a biotech option at the time. And fortunately I did that because along the way I decided to volunteer at a hospital and learned that I can't really deal with the sight of blood. So that was not really the career for me. So out of undergraduate, I was very interested in material science after I went home and decided I needed to do something else. Went to graduate school to study materials, but more catalysis, surface science, something that's much more chemical engineering mainstream. At the time, UCSB had an NSF center for quantized electronic structures and kind of got involved for that just because that was where the funding was, and became really hooked on how I could apply chemical engineering to something that is kind of unique, the area of semiconductors. During that period, learned how to grow semiconductor crystals and haven't looked back. So I'd say I'm very fortunate that I'm actually able to use what I learned during that time, even to this day. So I do proper engineering work on a daily basis. And so very, very thankful for that.
It's a good story. So let's talk about gallium nitride. You know, it's different from silicon, which is what we use every day, which is what everybody's mostly familiar with. Can you give a little bit of background on what makes GaN unique and why is it important and how is your company involved?
Sure, absolutely. So you're right, GaN is different from silicon. It's one material in a larger class of materials known as compound semiconductors, specifically something called 3-5 materials because groups 3 and 5 on the periodic chart, that's where they get their name. They have capabilities that silicon doesn't have. So specifically, they perform really well at high frequencies. So wireless communication, so the power amplifier in your mobile phone uses a compound semiconductor gallium arsenide. They're excellent emitters and detectors of light over a wide spectrum. So transceivers for data and telecoms are based on indium phosphide lasers. 3D sensing in your phone, the thing that opens up your phone if you have an iPhone, that's compound semiconductors brought to you by my company. Wearable health monitors, LEDs, and so anything that emits and detects light. And then they're highly efficient in terms of LEDs. That's what a lot of people know about, but also power switching. GaN, which is one of those materials, is unique because it's very versatile. It can be used in all three of those areas. So in RF, it's used in base stations, optical applications, I mentioned LEDs. And the real thing that's driving it today is power switching. So one unique thing about compound semiconductors and GaN is that what enables them to extend what silicon's able to do is different than for silicon. So silicon was very much enabled by being able to scale it to smaller dimensions through lithography. And so that's the reason that the rooms full of computers that people used to have for like space program and then ultimately in the 80s, they're now able to put the same computing power on your wrist. The reason is because lithography allows you to scale things down to very small dimensions. For compound semiconductors, that's not actually the case. Because they're compounds, they have a lot more degrees of freedom, and you can make layer stacks of the different materials. Just think of it as a very, very small layered cake. And that's done through a process called epitaxy. And that's where the performance is designed. And, you know, for silicon, that's not the same case because silicon is a single element. So there's not as many degrees of freedom. And so for compound semiconductors, it is about controlling things on very small dimensions, specifically the atomic scale, but it's in the layer stacks that we create and in the purity of those layer stacks. And so that's what IQE does. We do epitaxy. That's all we do because that's where the value is. And we're the only one that we're the only compound semiconductor pure play epi supplier that's global, which is really important in today's geopolitical environment. And we have the full suite of materials. It just happens to be that GaN is one of those materials, and GaN is a very very compelling material, and that's really where we're focused today.
Okay, so where is GaN coming from? I mean, where's it going? What will it take for the material to be more widely adopted?
Yeah, so where it's coming from? So it started with two things. It started with blue emitters, just because of the band gap that it has, as well as RF funded by the government for radar, the US government. And then that wireless, that RF technology was ultimately leveraged for wireless comms. And that was really IQE's first GaN product. Along the way, people started to look at putting GaN on silicon for RF and then ultimately for power. And so that's really where GaN is going in the immediate term, is for power electronics. And that's where we see think we'll really start getting a big wide adoption just due to the market that's there, because you're going to have a very significant industrial and consumer market. And it's really relying on the fact that GaN is highly power efficient. And so it's able to convert power much more efficiently than silicon. And so it's right now it's being used and being designed in and being scaled. And I think that's what you're going to see to really see GaN take off.
Oh, good. So what's driving GaN's big moment now?
It, stated simply, it's needs. So it's really the drive to net zero that's really driving it. So that's something that arguably is the most important initiative that we have as a human race, is the environmental crisis we find ourselves in. We need to find a way to fix that or to prevent it from getting worse. Like I said, it's much more efficient, maybe 40% more efficient in certain power switching applications. And so that's really what's driving it right now, is need and performance. And one of the things that's out there is the fast USB chargers that you'll see today. For example, if you get on Amazon and look up GaN charger, you'll see all these really efficient USB-C chargers. Those are using GaN, and even Apple's newest high-end charger uses GaN. And so the thing that's driving it right now is the power efficiency that it enables, and that's really all enabled by the societal initiative to cut carbon emissions, driving to net zero.
And can you tell me a little bit about IQE's 30-year history with GaN?
Sure. So our history started with RF through the U.S. government, our U.S. site, and that was gallium nitride on silicon carbide substrates, and that was our first successful product line for that. And today, those are used in base stations. And so along the way, we were involved in a lot of the government or leading edge programs. So GaN until recently was very much a low volume material, but it always had potential, and there's a lot of R&D. And so our expertise fit well into that. And so we were involved in lots of programs, and specifically for GaN, it's all about the substrate that you use. So we've been involved and are one of the few that can do it on all different substrates. So silicon carbides for your RF, we've even done it on sapphire, even done it on GaN substrates. And so we have a big wealth of IP for doing all of that. And so when GaN on silicon came along, that experimentation collaboration with all those variants, we're able to now leverage that And so we have the RF product. Now we're going to power. And the one that's going to be right behind that is going to be micro LEDs. So very, very small LEDs. And so our R&D efforts in GaN are all really aimed at power and micro LED for the future.
So today, AI is driving the semiconductor industry. How does GaN play into AI?
That's a great question. It really is. So you're right, absolutely right. Certainly AI is really the hot topic. It's important to realize, I think, that we're really only at the beginning of that. So the current generation of AI developed really due to the convergence of three factors. There were massive amounts of social media data out there to mine and deal with. Relatively cheap hardware, specifically memory, and then clever algorithms. And so those three factors kind of converged and gave you the kind of the AI revolution, or really brought AI onto the scene. But for the most part, if you think about it, AI today really operates on static data. And it's really been, the focus has really been on the compute side of that. Going forward, AI is going to really need to operate on dynamic data. So we're going to want AI to make decisions for that. So even though we call things smart, you're going to really want them to be smart. I'm not going to want to be able to turn off my washing machine remotely. I'm going to want my washing machine to sense what color fabrics are in it and decide what water temperature to use. So you're going to want AI to do some pretty important things. Well, if you look through that, well, what is that going to take and how does that change things? Well, it's going to need to operate on real-time dynamic data. It's going to require that everything be connected. To be able to allow, everything's going to be a 5G transmitter from the light post to maybe even the clothes you wear. And so that's going to be big for everything that IQE does in terms of compounds. But if you think about the amount of data that's going to have to move from place to place, it's going to have to run from where you sense it to the edge where it can be computed. And that computation is still going to be a focus. And so that's going to basically use a lot of energy. It's going to drive up energy use. And the estimates I've seen is that, you know, 1% of the electric consumption in 23 was used in data centers. And that's projected to grow by at least 10x by 2030. And to me, that even seems conservative. And so it's kind of ironic. We'll be creating this smarter world, something that society is very much demanding. But at the same time, we're going to be doing something that's completely converse to net zero. We're going to be using exponentially more energy. And so that's where GaN comes in big time with AI. GaN power is going to be absolutely necessary to be able to do that and have any chance of still meeting net zero initiatives. And it's going to be largely a requirement. So anything that converts AC supply to DC can use GaN. And so if you start thinking about massive data centers, if you were to take all of those power supplies that are in there and convert them instantly to GaN, well, then all of a sudden you've saved 40% and you're just doing the same thing. And so GaN is going to come in play with AI because I think it's really one of the only games in town that's going to allow it to be efficient enough such that it doesn't blow up the net zero initiatives.
Oh, interesting. So what's next for GaN?
Yeah, so I think the next thing, I think you'll see the propagation in the charging and the power electronics market. And I think that's already happening. And I think in that area, what you'll see is the voltage ratings for GaN will be increased. So today, you're at 650. I think that'll go to 1200. In fact, we're already developing that. And that's going to actually expand the market for GaN into different applications like traction inverters for EVs and things like that. And then I think outside beyond that, I think the next big wave for GaN will be micro LEDs. And so I mentioned earlier that GaN is used in LEDs. These are extremely small LEDs, and that makes a really big difference because it allows you to get very creative for form factors of it. It allows you to have extremely efficient, very small displays for things like wearables. And so it's going to be key for things like the metaverse, for very, very small, unique applications. And ultimately, you'll be using bigger applications. And that's going to be the market that's going to really drive it into consumer hands. And once it hits consumer hands, that's when you'll see things largely take off even to a bigger degree. So I think the power market will drive it in both consumer and industrial applications in the immediate term. And then I think behind that, micro LEDs are going to create an even bigger wave of activity. And again, all of it's really being driven by the capability the material has that you can't do with anything else.
Right. So we've experienced some shortages, something where it's always on our mind. How about GaN? Is the GaN market going to experience something similar?
Well, I certainly hope not. And I do think that governments have really woken up to the fact that semiconductors are very much the oil of the current generation. They are of strategic importance. And so you're seeing all sorts of CHIPS acts with various countries, which is great. However, I still think there's an education that's needed if we're going to prevent that type of shortage that you're referring to. There's still a lack of understanding of the detail and subtlety of the supply chains. And so, for example, there have been investments in the U.S. in specialty foundries for GaN, like with GF. And I'm sure there's a feeling by some that, well, we've checked that box off, we've got that covered. But there hasn't been a detailed mapping of that full supply chain, because if there was, they would have a realization that they're funding these billions of dollars for fab. And that's underpinned by a very small, relatively small number of materials companies that prop that up. And as I said, IQE is the only one of those that's global in the supply of GaN. And so up to this point, I think EPI has flown under the radar. And I think that that's a big risk. I think it needs to change. There needs to be that realization and that government support for manufacturing infrastructure. Because I think if you don't have that, I kind of think that a shortage is likely inevitable, and it'll really be akin to, you know, COVID, when high-priced cars were sitting on lots and couldn't be sold because there was a single chip worth tens of dollars missing. Here it'll be multi-billion dollar fabs that'll grind to a halt because they don't have the starting materials that they need. And that's even more acute when you really think about the geopolitical landscape, where countries or certain regions of the world are creating parallel supply chains. And so you could actually have regional outages of strategically critical materials. So I think to answer your question, I do think it's a possibility. I think it's something that we can head off. I do think that there needs to be government support even more so than there is today. There's a beginning of a realization, but I think it needs to go quite a bit deeper to head that off.
Yeah, well, it's on our mind, so hopefully we've learned from our experiences. Great conversation, Rodney. Pleasure to meet you, and hopefully we can catch up again later this year.
Yeah, absolutely happy to come back, and thank you for the time, and it's been a pleasure.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.